Next case on the docket is United States versus Gierzinski. This is a certified case, so the government will go first.
Chief Judge Erdman, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Tara O'Brien Goble, and along with Captain Sam Landis, I represent the United States. This court should set aside the military judge's ruling because the evidence was found in plain view and the military judge abused his discretion in suppressing it.
Counsel, as you get started with your arguments, can I ask you about a factual oddity in this case? So here we have a situation where there is the search warrant, and it's not until 9 months later that the search occurs and the child pornography is found after the conviction of appellant. So we have the search warrant saying you can look for evidence relating to the improper relationship between appellant and DB. Appellant is convicted of that, and then 9 months later, there's the new search and the finding of the new contraband. Is it the government's position that if there's no time limit in a search warrant, then the validity of that warrant lasts in perpetuity?
Not always. In this situation, the warrant was still valid based on the fact that, one, there was no time limit specified in the warrant. Two, there was still probable cause to believe that there was evidence of crime on those computers. But three, the case is not done until appellate review in a certain in the military justice system.
What were you going to do with the evidence? Are you so overstaffed? Is the Army so overstaffed in their criminal investigative divisions that they continue to search for evidence of things that someone's already been convicted of?
No, Your Honor, and it's possible
that's what this warrant covered, right? Which was suspected evidence of the offenses that he'd already been convicted of.
It did. It covered suspected evidence of communications between appellee and DB, which did form the basis for the Article 60, for the original court-martial in this case. However,
I think this ties in with Judge Olson's question about the factual oddity. Like, what were they doing? Why were they continuing to investigate something that basically was mooted by the fact he'd been convicted of it? Or was it instead just a pretext to continue to look on it at his computer?
It was not a pretext to continue to look on his computer because there could have been...
What was it?
There could have been different evidence of crimes between appellee and DB on the computer, and so therefore there was still probable cause in this case for them to go further and look for it. If there was evidence of entirely different crimes, for instance, let's say there was evidence in there based on communications of a rape of DB, that is an entirely separate crime than that which was charged and convicted of in the first court-martial.
But is that a practice of the prosecutors in the Army, that once you charge a person with a crime and they are convicted and they're sent away, that you continue to look for evidence of the same crime?
Not generally, Your Honor. And
so then why in this case?
It's certainly not best practice in general to move forward with the court-martial before the forensic examination of the computers have been done. In this case, it was moved forward with, perhaps because the commander wanted to push forward on what they knew that they had evidence of then.
So are we to assume that if they found evidence, which they didn't, additional evidence, that there would have been another court-martial? For same crime, same victim, different dates.
Different offenses potentially too. So for instance, if there was evidence of, again, like I said, a rape of a child or something he hadn't been tried for, then that wouldn't have been prohibited.
The rape of a child, I don't think, is one of the things that's listed in the warrant, right? It's what he was actually charged with in the first trial. Indecent act with child endangerment, attempted aggravated sexual assault.
No, it wasn't, Your Honor, but certainly actual evidence of that would be within the realm of looking for evidence of those.
Search for evidence of an offense that the warrant doesn't cover?
No, Your Honor. The warrant covered evidence of the offenses that were tried in the first court-martial.
So our question to you is, what was the government doing? And do you really have criminal investigators that are so underutilized or so looking for things to do that they continue to investigate basically cold cases?
It's generally not best practice. However, in this case, there was probable cause to believe there was evidence on that computer, and furthermore, where the appeal was still pending and the conviction could have been overturned, then that evidence could have been used in a rehearing. And furthermore, the military judge in this case, where it's an Article 62 that came up as an interlocutory appeal, did not make a finding that there was any issue with the ability to search, despite the fact that they talked about it in the motions hearing. The issue that the military judge decided was that the evidence was not in the scope of a valid warrant. So that the military judge did find that the warrant in this case was valid, and that was that fact was not clearly erroneous, that there was a valid warrant and that the warrant did allow searching for evidence of communications between Apelli and DB. And
okay.
So therefore,
communications. So why did they specifically ask for them to look for child pornography?
In the request that was sent up to JBLM from the Presidio, there was a request form that did specify child pornography. However, the four corners of the warrant did not specify child pornography. And in the motions hearing, the forensic examiner testified that he relied on the scope of the actual warrant.
I thought he testified that he looked at both of them, both the instructions and the warrant.
Yes, he did, but he also then further clarified in there that while he looked at both the instructions and the warrant, he only used the four corners of the warrant when he actually executed his search.
But he obviously didn't, because he said that all relevant pictures or images are attached, and as part of that relevant attachment was the child pornography. If it wasn't part of the, in his mind, if it wasn't part of the search warrant, it wouldn't have been relevant.
In his report, he actually specified that at the beginning of his DFE report, he specified that a federal search warrant authorized the examination. However, it limited the analysis of the media for items of evidence pertaining to the offenses under investigation. And as he laid out each offense under investigation, next to it he would say evidence of communication or evidence pertinent to the investigation at hand, or he would write evidence of additional victims or evidence of child pornography, which seems to suggest he understood the scope of the warrant. But that isn't even...
Why is he listing child pornography if it wasn't in the warrant?
That goes back to where the military judge in this case abused his discretion. The child pornography in this case was found in plain view when he was looking for communications between Apelli and DB.
He was told to look for child pornography.
He was told to look for it.
He was told to look for it, and he saw names that were suggestive of it, and instead of stopping and getting a warrant, he looked.
Yes, while the request form did specify child pornography, the request in and of itself cannot expand the scope of the warrant. He had a valid warrant, which he was able to read and see the scope of which did not contain.
He did, in fact, exceed the scope.
This is what he said. Now, do you use those two simultaneously, or do you just use the search warrant? No, I use both. Okay.
And then he proceeded to clarify right after saying that, but he does use just the actual warrant. And I believe it's at JA 16. He goes on to say, but the authorization, the search warrant, actually determines the laboratory requests. So therefore, although he uses both, it is the search warrant itself that determines the four corners. But that doesn't even matter under United States versus, or California v. Horton, the Supreme Court case, which makes it clear that the subjective intent of law enforcement doesn't matter when you're looking at whether or not they were acting within the scope of the warrant. What matters is that there's a valid warrant, and every area within which was searched by the investigator was an area that could be searched based on a valid warrant. Now, in this case, the military judge made a finding that there was a valid warrant that could include communications between Apelli and DB, and that those communications could consist of pictures and could even consist of child pornography as it related to DB or communications between Apelli and DB. And in this case, we're dealing with a thumb drive. So we're not dealing with something with an operating system like a computer or even a hard drive. We're dealing with a thumb drive that doesn't have an operating system, and it didn't have any privacy constructs, so there were no file folders. So immediately when he used the software to open up the programs, all of the images in this case populated onto the screen. And he testified during the motions hearing that the program he was using was called Table Tree View. And so that allowed for a description to be up here of the file, and down here in the corner there would be essentially a thumbnail. And he said that at the point that he opened up that thumb drive, it was immediately apparent to him that child pornography was there. So at that point, he was searching the thumb drive within the scope of a valid warrant, which means he's already satisfied the first factor or prong of the Horton test.
So is it a defense to a potential violation of an individual's Fourth Amendment rights if a commercial search program automatically goes to an image?
A commercial search program.
Well, this program, whatever it is that he used to search with. And it seems to me your argument is that he used this program, and when he put everything in, up popped these images.
Yes, and numerous cases such as United States versus Burgess in the Tenth Circuit, United States versus Mann in the Seventh Circuit, United States versus Will, have all talked about the programs in which a forensics examiner utilizes. And they specify that we're not going to limit the way in which somebody searches or the mechanics or the programs that they use as long as it's reasonable under the circumstances. Here, the program that he used was a program that's accepted. And essentially, all it really does is it makes a mirror image of what's already on the hard drive. So it's just a mirror image of what's on the hard drive, and it shows a little thumbnail of the photo in the corner. And that was well within the scope of the warrant, especially based on the fact that the military judge found that photos would be encompassed within the scope.
Is it the government's view that under this warrant, the agents could have looked through everything?
Under this warrant, whether the agents could have looked through everything is, in this case, probably they could have looked through almost everything. There are certain circumstances. So, for instance, on the hard drive, they could look through everything because it's all in plain view and there were no folders. However, because you're looking for communications and communications could take the form of pictures, there's going to be more that they could look through than in a situation like in United States versus Cherry.
Can you put folders on a thumb drive?
You can.
You can? Okay, you can. So in a sense, he was negligent in not... No, I'm asking. I don't know.
In not labeling
folders? Yeah, the only thumb drives I have are ones that were given by hotels or something. You can put walls in them? Okay.
Yes,
so he just negligently didn't, and therefore, tough. All this popped up. He could have avoided this by putting walls in there, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
And this is also different than a situation like in when you have an operating system and you run something for something like patch values, like they found in United States versus Mann. If you're running a system that has the ability to find patch values and automatically separate child pornography, then that certainly is going to show that you were looking for child pornography. Here, he just opened the thumb drive and it was there.
Counsel, first of all, you're fixating on the fact that the military judge found that this was a valid warrant. We're not bound by that, are we? If we said it was formally a valid warrant, and once the purposes for which it was executed were finished, it was no longer a valid warrant. It was moot. I mean, it was done. It was over. If they wanted to search for child pornography, they needed to get a new warrant.
Right. To the extent that that's a conclusion of law, then you are not bound by that. to the extent it's a finally a finding of fact, the fact that he was, that the warrant could include photographs and whatnot, then you are bound by that unless it's clearly erroneous.
Okay. And when the military judge said neither the affidavit nor the warrant mentioned anything about or even closely approximating evidence of child pornography, and then the footnote, it's interesting to note that when SA sent the 2922, he listed child pornography first in both places where he explained to the DFE what he should be looking for, the communications between the accused and the victim that were the real object of the investigation, which was completed and had been closed, that's an aside by Judge Ryan, almost appears as an afterthought in the request. The court will not speculate as to the reason for this change of course, as there is no evidence to explain it. The court simply notes that this is troubling as an improperly oriented DFE outside the parameters of the warrant. So, I mean, the military judge clearly felt that this, what happened in this particular search, was outside the parameters of the warrant.
Yes, and
your position is, well, it doesn't matter because it was in plain view.
Our position is that that finding is a conclusion of law, which was an abuse of discretion because the DFE nor the examiner who sent up the request had the authority to expand the warrant. So to the extent that the DFE was acting outside the scope of the warrant, you would have to find that he was looking in places that he couldn't look within the four corners of the valid warrant. And in this case, because he wasn't looking in any places where he couldn't look for communications between DB and Apelli, he was acting within the scope of the warrant,
so
and therefore it was in plain view.
It was clearly outside the scope of the warrant to look for child pornography, but it's all okay because it was in plain view.
Yes, and that is consistent with United States versus Horton,
and it was in plain view because he was looking at these things, and even though he'd been guided to look primarily for child pornography, right, that's still okay, even though the other things he'd already been convicted of.
Yes,
okay,
it is.
Let me clarify that a minute. The first Please. Supposition there was that the search was beyond the scope of the warrant. So at that point, it's in violation of the Fourth Amendment. Are you saying that even in that situation, plain view applies?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
So if this court finds that it was outside that he was acting outside the scope of the warrant, plain view cannot
or
apply.
Or if it was an invalid warrant.
Or that it was an invalid warrant, plain view cannot apply.
Thank you.
I see that I'm out of time. Pending further questions,
I'll reserve. Well, I have one question. At the trial, did the government, I can't remember now, if the prosecutor raised the issue of plain view? And if not, why didn't the CCA raise it? The issue of plain view, in other words, now we're in an area where, hey, look, the government says, hey, if there was a problem here, it's okay because the agent was in a place where he had the right to be when he came upon the contraband and seized it. But my question is, did this issue come up at the trial? Did the government, the prosecutor, argue plain view down there?
He did, Your Honor.
Okay. But then why, and maybe you may not know this, but why didn't the CCA address that issue, and why didn't the military judge address it in his findings? You may not know the answer to those
questions. The fact that it wasn't addressed by both the military judge or the CCA was an abuse of discretion on both of their parts because it was found in plain view and should have at least been addressed by either of them. To the extent that the military judge did not address it, it could be because the military judge believed that the agent was acting outside the scope of the warrant, which he was not. He was acting within the four corners of the warrant when he opened the thumb drive, which simply had files on it, and therefore plain view should have been addressed, and it was an abuse of discretion.
I thought the CCA did address plain view in their footnote.
In a footnote, yes,
yeah.
Your Honor.
Okay. And they said it wasn't
I don't know
applicable.
If you can call that addressing it.
Yeah.
In a footnote. It's a pretty significant issue, I think.
Thank you.
Thank you. You'll have further time on rebuttal. We'll now hear from the appellee.
Chief Judge Erdman, members of the court, may it please the court. I'm Captain Cody Cheek, and along with my co-counsel, Captain Ryan T. Yoder, we represent the appellee in this case, Private Justin M. Gertzinski. The question before this court is whether the military judge, under the deeply troubling facts of this case, abused his discretion in this ruling. And the answer, particularly when viewing the evidence in light most favorable to Private Gertzinski, is no, for three reasons. First, the examiner exceeded the scope of the warrant in his search. Second, based on the findings and conclusions of the military judge's ruling, plain view is inapplicable in this case. Third, yes, Your Honor, because he found explicitly, or excuse me, he concluded explicitly that he was acting outside the scope of the warrant when he opened that file. And as the government counsel explained...
Who's he, the military judge?
Yes, Your Honor, my apologies. The military judge concluded, and it's at, I believe, Joint Appendix 167 is... Joint Appendix 170. What he says is, and skipping ahead, he says, these communications could arguably and logically include pictures and even child pornography if such child pornography were either a communication or a possible communication to the alleged victim. Alas, the files in question were neither. So the military judge found that these files, opening these files, was not within the scope of the warrant. Based on that conclusion, and I draw it back to one page further in his analysis at Joint Appendix 169, what he says is searches which exceed the scope of the authorization or warrant will be held invalid and the evidence obtained therefrom suppressed, absent the application of an exception. And for an exception to the unlawful search, he analyzed inevitable discovery. He analyzed the good faith exception. So he clearly and clinically looked at the possible exceptions to the unlawful search. And based on the facts of this case, he found they didn't apply. But even more broadly, and in the judge's finding, over the findings over scope, the military judge acknowledged most or all of the arguments I believe the government counsel made today.
Now, you gave us number one or number two. What was number three?
Yes, Your Honor. I wanted to make sure I answered Judge Ryan's question. The third, Your Honor, is that applying the exclusionary rule in this case was both warranted and appropriate. Now, before addressing scope and then...
Ask you again why.
Or which...
Why is it warranted and appropriate?
Yes, Your Honor. In this case...
Usually when people say that, then they say because. Fill in the blank.
Yes, Your Honor. It is warranted and appropriate in this case because at its core, this case represents significant government overreach without any rational explanation. There is no explanation for why the case agent included child pornography at the forefront of the improperly expanded examination request in this case.
I have a threshold question. Do you have a view as to whether, in fact, this was a valid warrant?
Your Honor, I think the judge...
Do you understand my question?
I do. Yes, Your Honor.
It has to do with Judge Olson's initial question about the unusual fact situation that this case comes to us.
Yes, Your Honor. The judge's... I think the judge acknowledges the questions about it because he said, even assuming you can even search the thumb drive for anything, that's the language he uses in his ruling, even assuming you can go into the thumb drive, this still fails because the actions were an unlawful search. So I don't think the judge is, there is language in which he says this was a proper warrant for the devices and for, but he doesn't explicitly say going into the thumb drive was lawful.
I'm asking you your view as to whether or not this was a valid warrant. I mean, understanding that at a point in time, A, of course it was a valid warrant, right? It was issued by a proper authority based upon probable cause with sufficient particularity, right? So point in time A, we can all agree it was a valid warrant. We're now not at point in time A, we're not even at point in time B, we're at point in time C, where the offense is upon which suspicion of which that the initial warrant was granted, he's been convicted of. So my question is, do you have a view as to whether it is still a valid warrant, and if not, why not?
Your Honor, in all frankness, I'm not prepared to adopt an explicit position, but I would say everything, the timeline, the factual oddity of the timeline in this case is horrendously troubling.
Would you agree that at some point search warrants can become stale?
Your Honor, and that was exactly what the parties argued at trial, and to the extent the military judge considered it, it wasn't encompassed in his ruling. So I'm not prepared to put forth our exact position over that, except to...
How about that at some point in time, their continued validity would be constitutionally unreasonable?
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely.
Which is a little bit different than stale.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think, absolutely, the reasonableness is connected with the temporal actions in this case.
What you asserted that the search wasn't any good because he started off... It was an unauthorized search, basically. I think it's what you said.
Yes.
What did you say? Okay, and why?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, the military judge... I have three reasons, Your Honor. First, the military judge made a finding of fact that the examiner used both documents in determining the scope of his search. That's a finding of fact, and based on the evidence and testimony, including that directly read by this honorable court at Joint Appendix 16, that's not a clearly erroneous finding of fact. Second, the military judge stated that neither the affidavit nor the warrant mention anything about or even closely relating to evidence of child pornography. And third, and in our opinion, most critically, the military judge stated that the files in question were neither communications nor possible communications to the alleged victim. That was what would have been within the scope of the warrant. And in fact, his language could not have been any clearer. Alas, the files in question were neither. Which makes perfect sense, but for several reasons. First, there's no evidence that any videos were exchanged between Apelli and DB in this case.
But how important is that? I mean, the fact that these weren't communications or possible communications with the victim, but in fact, had they found child pornography in an area that they could have been looking at, that would have been, that they could have then said, wait a minute, I need to go get another warrant and take a look at this.
Yes, Your Honor, that have been position. I'm sorry.
But why, I mean, it seems to me that had they found it in an area where they should have been, or could have been, should have been, then they could have taken the appropriate steps to further examine it.
Well, Your Honor, our position is the engine driving that analysis is scope. And here the judge found that he was outside the scope when he clicked on those files to search them. And the government cited two cases. And I point this court to the rationale applied by both of those cases. In Mann, the court found that for, I believe, 686 images, that the examiner in that case was within the scope when he clicked on those files. But they found that for four, the KFF flagged files, that it wasn't in the scope. And what they said is the detective knew or should have known that files in a database of known child pornography images would be outside the scope of the warrant.
I have another question about the validity of the warrant. This warrant was issued under Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 41, right, by a federal magistrate, with a specific time limitation on it, and it was in fact not acted upon until over a year later with no explanation as to why. Does that inform your view as to whether it was a valid warrant?
Your Honor, they initially seized the items. Your Honor, I mean,
Judge Olson would probably know this far better than I do, but I think that, do you know Judge Olson?
No.
Your Honor, again, I, well.
Understand.
Yes, Your Honor. Getting back to the scope, you know, I talked about Mann. They found four files. You could not click on those files. And then they suppressed them. They didn't say, well, it was so obvious that this could have been. In fact, they concluded the exact opposite. They said, based on the markings and based on the nature of these four files, you can't click on them. That's outside the scope. They're suppressed. And in dicta, the other case cited by the government counsel, Burgess out of the Tenth Circuit, albeit in dicta, their logic is directly applicable. What they say is file or directory names may sometimes alert one to contents, e.g. Russian Lolitas, and then later they say when a computer search for drug-related evidence reveals file names strongly suggesting pornography, an officer might be required to get another warrant before proceeding. So in Mann, they said you were okay to click a lot of these files, but not all of them. These, you're outside the scope, and they suppress those images. Burgess uses the exact same rationale.
Jake, let me ask you a question. Going back to the finding by the military judge that the agent relied on both the letter to him and the actual search authorization, or the warrant in this case. Now, what would be the reason why the military judge would make that finding when, as we've heard from during the government's presentation, the agent actually cleared it up and said, hey, look, no, I was guided by, even though I got this letter and I read it, I was guided by the four corners of the warrant.
Your Honor, I believe the exact testimony that he gives is very insightful.
Okay.
What he says is, at Joint Appendix 16, the exact quote is, but the authorization, the search warrant, so it says, I use both. And then he clarifies, but the authorization, the search warrant actually determines laboratory requests. So you follow what the warrant says, he says yes. Now, what he clarified is that the examination requests are supposed to be governed and determined by the language of the warrant. But this one wasn't. This was an improperly expanded examination request.
But it sounds like he recognized that. When he was in his testimony, he seemed to recognize that the letter or this additional information was expanding the warrant, and he was trying to make it clear that he was confining his activity to the four corners of the warrant.
Your Honor, he said that he followed the other two limitations, which is the temporal restrictions and the owner of the property. But he actually, in his report, explicitly labeled child pornography as relevant evidence, or he said relevant evidence will be included in the report, in the findings. And the evidence he included was child pornography. Child pornography was not relevant to anything except the improperly expanded examination request. So when the judge found you followed both documents, you did not have the authority to click on the files in this case. This is an unlawful search. As you can't click on it, this violates the first warrant. Well, he doesn't say this, but what he says is the searches which exceed the scope of the authorization of the warrant will be held invalid and the evidence obtained therefrom suppressed, absent an exception. And again, he looked at both inevitable discovery and the good faith exception.
Have you seen the file name and stopped and sought an additional authorization? Would that have been acceptable?
The judge says this exactly what should have happened. He said he was bound by the Fourth Amendment to stop and go get a new authorization before he opened those files. So no, Your Honor, under that, and in fact, several courts looked favorably upon.
Captain Chief, my understanding is that the search, how he came upon these images, is that this one screen popped up and there everything was. Is he supposed to ignore that? If there is a image icon and he clearly recognizes it as child pornography, I mean, my understanding of the plain view, let's assume there is a valid warrant. If he's where he's supposed to be and he comes upon something like this, he could stop, but he could actually seize that particular file, couldn't he?
Your Honor, that's absolutely a different analysis from what we have here, because a judge made a factual finding.
I understand that. I'm assuming without deciding, as we say up here.
Well, Your Honor,
that we've gotten past that issue, and I just want to know mechanically, had he been where he was supposed to be, and this image arrived on his screen along with all the other data on the screen, my understanding that if he was, in fact, where he was supposed to be, that he's certainly not required to go get a warrant. He's required to get a warrant if he wants a search on, maybe. But for that particular file, he could have seized that one. It would be the same, wouldn't it be, if you were in my house on a warrant looking for elephant shoes. And as you're searching through looking for elephant shoes, you see a pound of cocaine laying in the closet. You can seize that cocaine right there, I think, can't you?
Under the facts of your hypothetical, Your Honor,
yes.
The seizure would not be a problem under
okay.
the facts of that
that's,
hypothetical.
That's my point.
If you had to search inside the container to view the contents, it's a different analysis.
Right, but it sounds like here you could, and I don't know how these things work. I don't pretend to know. But my understanding is that when this particular file came up with all these others, he could recognize a visual icon that showed him that it was child pornography.
We absolutely dispute that any image preview, image preview that he saw gave any.
So whether the hypothetical that Judge Sparks came up with would apply depends on whether the military judge's description, which did not include an icon, was clearly erroneous or not.
Yes, Your Honor, and the applicability of the hypo, there's still the threshold considerations over whether you could even go in the thumb drive. The judge said even assuming that, in addition to the concerns over whether the warrant, the unreasonableness.
No, my point was on this very focused issue of if he's already there. Now, correct me, because I don't fully understand. When the data appeared on his screen, was there or was there not something of a visual icon that identified, at least to the agent, that this was a child pornography?
Your Honor, I would point this honorable court to Joint Appendix 18. There is no clearer question and no clearer answer than you can get to that direct issue. And I'm just going to read directly from Joint Appendix 18. How did you know they were child pornography? Answer. Based on my experience, received file names indicative of child pornography. If there is any ambiguity from that answer, which there's not, the government's remaining motions and arguments clear up any ambiguities. And in fact, as we argued in the brief, the parties, after his testimony, which again, I don't know how you could have any clearer question or answer, how did you know they were child pornography? Answer, file names. The agent didn't testify about any image preview that was explicitly, and in fact, the military judge made another finding.
Now that may, I'm not suggesting, saying he did. I was trying to genuinely understand whether he did or did not. And I still don't know.
Your Honor, the record is devoid of any explicit discussion of what, if anything, he saw in the image preview.
All right.
Whether or not an image preview exists is a separate question from whether or not it made him believe that there was child pornography in plain view.
But your position is that whatever he saw was basically a file name.
Your Honor, that was his position. That was the government's position at trial.
Okay.
I can point you to four different citations in the record.
Not necessary. I'll take you at your word.
Oh, okay. Yes, Your Honor. If you do decide you'd like to look at them, it's Joint Appendix 115, again in 115, 38, 39, and 135. There was no dispute between the parties that it was the file names. And the judge made that finding. The judge says he opened the thumb drive and saw file names. He suspected they contained child pornography. Without obtaining a new authorization, he opened the file. By viewing the file, he determined it was child pornography. As in Osorio, the judge's findings were he had to open the file to determine its contents. He didn't know what it was until he opened it. And again, Your Honor, his testimony, file names. He never at any point, one would suspect that if he saw a horrendous image preview, clearly indicative of these types of files, he'd have said so. Or the government would have argued it. The record remains devoid of any type of specificity over any aspect of his suspicion apart from the file names indicative of child pornography.
You may briefly conclude.
Thank you, Your Honor. In conclusion, We respectfully request this honorable court affirm the ruling of the military judge.
Thank you, counsel. We'll now hear rebuttal from the government.
Three points to make on rebuttal. First, in response to your question regarding the file names versus the image preview, it doesn't actually matter whether it was file names or images, because file names would have been enough to show the immediately apparent criminal nature as articulated by the DFE in this case, because he stated in his experience he knew that it was file names. But if you turn to JA18 through JA19, he does talk about how he used table tree view and how while he used the file names, the forensic software was set up to retrieve an image at the bottom. So based on his testimony, you can see that
Did he say that he looked at it, or did he say that that's what the program did?
He said that that's how the program worked, but it was an answer to the question of what it was that was immediately apparent or whether he had to dive deep, and he said, well, the file names, actually the forensic software is set up to retrieve three different views all at the same time, table tree view, so, and then they go on talking about that, and so he said, yes, I selected picture view. Yeah, I did select picture view. That's just the bottom corner of the screen would have a picture. But even still, the file name is enough to show the immediately incriminating nature in plain view, which it did on this thumb drive. Secondly, under United States versus Horton, it doesn't matter whether the officer subjectively wanted to find child pornography when he was doing that search. That court stated the fact that an officer is interested in an item of evidence and fully expects to find it in the course of a search should not invalidate its seizure if the search is confined in an area and duration by the terms of the warrant and a valid exception to the warrant requirement. And here, because he was working within the scope of the warrant, it doesn't matter if he wanted to find it. That same idea was also used in United States versus Williams by the Fourth Circuit with very similar facts to this case, where the court said even if finding child pornography was their hope from the outset, it doesn't matter if he was working within the confines of the warrant.
Can you just explain to me again, because I think I've missed it, which is, what is your best argument for why he was acting within the scope of the warrant?
He was acting within the scope of the warrant because he did have a valid warrant to go into the thumb drive to look for communications between Apelli and DB, and when he opened the thumb drive, immediately, without any files or anything, without any folders, all of the files populated on the screen in plain view.
Okay. Did you happen to know whether it matters or not? I asked a question of the appellant's of the defendant's counsel earlier. Do you have any idea whether or not the fact that this warrant was authorized pursuant to Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 41 has any bearing on whether it's still valid when the purpose for which it was originally executed appears to have dissipated by virtue of the conviction?
No, Your Honor. However, as it relates to your question on the date, that's specified in that warrant, our position is that was the date for when the items must be seized by.
It could be searched whenever.
Within the confines of reasonableness, and here where we had still a pending appeal, there was no time limit on when.
So your reasonableness then is tied to the pending appeal?
Yes, Your Honor.
Chief Judge, I have one question. I know the counsel is over time. Going back to this finding by the military judge that the agent relied on both things, the warrant and then this other information, you want to say that that's clearly erroneous, right?
Yes.
Because of how the agent clarified his testimony later on. Now, would it need to be clearly erroneous? I mean, what if the judge just didn't believe him? Just didn't believe the agent?
It doesn't need to be clearly erroneous for you to find that his conclusion that he was
acting. You say that's a question of law, not a question of fact?
The question of law is whether or not the warrant was expanded by that, and so therefore that's reviewed by you, de novo.
No, I understand that, but the question of whether or not the agent relied on both or just the warrant. Isn't that a question of fact?
That is.
Right, and I thought you had earlier said that you thought that was a clearly erroneous finding.
It is.
That's right. But my point is that, or my question is that, couldn't the military judge, and wouldn't it have been within his rights to do so, to simply not believe the agent when they went to clarify that part of their testimony? Can't the military judge do that? Yeah. I mean, he's down there looking at the sweaty brow and the beady eyes, deciding whether he's going to believe someone or not.
His finding would have to still be supported by the record, and here that finding is not entirely supported by the record.
Right, but the record is simply the testimony of the agent, isn't it? I either relied on both or I relied on one.
Do you agree that it's at least possible to read the military judge's findings of fact and conclusions of law to suggest that he believed that the agent was searching for child pornography?
Yes, and that and our point is that that's actually not, that doesn't even matter. So even if you take his fact as a not clearly erroneous fact under Horton versus California, it doesn't matter because he was searching within the confines of an area he could be searching in based on a valid warrant, based on Horton and Williams.
Okay. Thank you.
Pending further questions?
Thank you, Counsel. The court thanks counsel for both parties. The case is now submitted. The court will be in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
All rise. Court is adjourned until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.